So today, we are off to Thessalonica. Today, I preach one passage we heard this morning only. Today, I hope you hear something you need to hear this morning. Today, I hope you hear something you yearn to hear this morning. Something that might light a spark, confirm a hoped-for hunch. Something that will make you lean into this whole God and Jesus thing. Today, we go to Thessalonica. Circa somewhere in the first century, a small community in this town of Thessalonica, living together, providing for one another, working for the most part for the good of all in the community, a pure sort of communism. Jesus has died. The disciples have been sent out to preach the good news that Jesus preached. There is a sense among some that Jesus will be coming back momentarily. The second coming, they say. And we are into two generations after Jesus, and he has not come back. One is reminded of the play, perhaps, Waiting for Godot, or the British comedy, Waiting for God. And folks are restless. Why should we work for our bread? Why should we work for our keep if Jesus is to come back and take us all with him? And folks are restless. Where the heck is he? Why has he not come back? How are we to live together? How long must we wait for this kingdom to come? For your will to be done. And folks are restless. There are those at this time who have headed into the desert to await Jesus' return, living literally on little bread and little water. These are the desert fathers, and yes, some of them were mothers. These were the first iterations of monks and nuns and those who live apart. So this is the setting for this letter that we heard Ben read this morning, this letter that is written to those in Thessalonica. And Paul, in writing this letter, sends them quite a scolding. What do you think you are doing? You must work to eat. Some of you are living in idleness, spending your time being busybodies. Did anyone ever think that would be a term you heard in the Bible? Busybodies. Stop. You who are unwilling to work shall not eat. And we, listening to this passage today, might find it, and I would say rather rightly so, might find it difficult to square Paul's words with Jesus' teachings, might find it rather difficult to speak of giving the shirt off one's back or feeding the hungry, might find it rather difficult to square this with an out-of-the-cold program, a soup lunch, or an offer of financial help. But read closer. Paul is not speaking of excluding community members, and that is all of us. Even the most obstreperous are considered worthy of inclusion and concern. And Paul is not speaking of those who are unable to work. That would be contrary to all Hebrew teachings, including those of Jesus. Rather, instead of idleness, the word that is used, read disorderliness. And instead of busybody, read fragmented. Being a busybody, living idle, are symptoms, not causes. Sitting at the dinner table, amongst community, family, and friends, there was sound. There was conversation and the clatter of cutlery. There were smells of food and candle and wood smoke. There was one voice at the table that could be heard over others, one voice that carried with it a strident note, laughing too hard at others' jokes, insisting their voice be heard, interrupting, striving for attention, and relating stories of others that seemed to look to harm a voice that tended to gossip, a bit malicious, aware of it or not. And someone at that table finally turned and looked at me and said, "It is okay, Karen. You are among family. You are among friends. Relax. You are loved. Relax. You are loved." A hard lesson to learn. A hard lesson for me. And I was one who had a very loving family, a modicum of stability, an ability to make my way in the world, some financial wherewithal. I didn't have an upbringing marked by dislocation or conflict. There are so many in the world who don't have the markers that I had. My fear of not being accepted, of clamoring for airtime. I know now these practices not only don't do me any good, but don't do the community any good. One in this congregation who is here today tells me that they keep going. They find joy because they know they are created by God and a child of God. These are not platitudes or wishful thinking. These are words literally to live by. And the resting in this gut and soul knowledge is very real help in times of suffering and of loss and of sorrow and of hurt, and it will come to all of us. And the work we do here in this place to share and foster out of our own burgeoning or tentative or settled conviction of the presence of this love in our own lives, the work we do here is to share and to foster practices that lay the groundwork, provide the space for, and model the behaviors that convey and constitute morality. Not as a set of rules or prohibitions, but rather practices that embody a life-affirming, individual-affirming, connection-affirming way of life. And the work we do here first is to learn to rest. One of my favorite quotes is by Rudolf Steiner. Some of you might know who he was. He was an Austrian thinker, a philosopher who died about 100 years ago. And he said this: "In future, times must come when we exist for one another and not the one by means of others. So shall the goal of earth be gained when each at rest within themselves can gladly give to others what neither would demand." When I first read these words, I must be honest, I could make neither head nor tail of them. But when I sat with them for a while, I realized they contained some of the most aspirational and inspirational ideas about humanity that I have ever read. They are also the teachings of Paul in this letter in Thessalonica. And they are also, when we strip away the layers of history and interpretation and dogma shellacked onto Jesus, they are also the great teachings of Jesus, the Great Commission. Love one another. And this is not the love of Hallmark cards or sappy verse. This is the love by which we recognize and we usher in the kingdom. This is the love that underscores and undergirds all of creation. Love that is both awesome and intimate. Jesus admonished and cajoled and pleaded his whole life with all those who would listen to live by these three words. They provide meaning to life. They deliver purpose to a life. And they provide rest. And if you live in these words, you will also die in them. We hear in the great Corinthians passage, "Now I see through a glass darkly, but when I die, I will see love. I will see God face to face." Another quote I love, and this one is from Raymond Carver. And did you get what you wanted from this life even so? I did. And what did you want? To call myself beloved, to feel myself beloved on this earth. Because Jesus was the beloved, because God, as it says, God was well pleased with him, does not preclude you as beloved. In fact, as I understand Jesus' teachings, it invites you specifically. It always has, and it always will. This is the very heart of that long word, incarnation, the word made flesh. It is not about the return of Jesus to earth, his witness, his peace, his rest, his teaching is already here. Jesus modeled the incarnation, and we in our individual lives and in our communal lives are called to do no less. We do this in part through practices as individuals and as church that encourage and invite us to grow in character, through practices that decrease our fragmentation and lessen our disorder. These are about living authentically out of our learning as disciples of this Jesus. They are literally how we invest God's stuff for God's mission in God's world. And these include the ones I'll say now, and you may think of others. They include how we spend our time, how we care for our body and make healthy choices, our priorities around money, how we choose to employ our talents and our gifts, how we manage our relationships, how we care for the environment, and how we practice our faith. These practices of faith are hallmarked by hospitality, an attitude of gratitude, confession, communal worship, sharing in communion, marking the Sabbath, stewardship, and always bracketed by the declaration that each are beloved of God, informed and reformed constantly by our learning as disciples of this Jesus. And if we parse this word, beloved, it is be and then loved. We all meet this criteria. In fact, all of creation does. First, we are. And because we are loved. If we all began and continued at our core with that premise and that promise, then as the Steiner quote that I read first says, we will exist for one another. Then we who are at rest within ourselves will gladly give to others. And that will be reciprocated without coercion or legislation. Imagine. Even in times of suffering, and perhaps especially in times of suffering, this becomes very evident. When we are stripped bare and made vulnerable, then we know we are beloved. If someone holds us and prays with us and listens to us and reflects with us, that love of God is transmitted in community. Many have not got the memo yet. They have not come to a place in their seeking and their meaning making, not spent the time or been in a community where this is so. This is from Henry Van Dyke. Time is too slow for those who wait, too swift for those who fear, too long for those who grieve, too short for those who rejoice, but for those who love, time is eternity. We are asked a lot of as humans. We are the only mammal who knows we die. We are the only mammal with the awesome power of critical higher level thinking. And we are also a remarkable entity. We love and we play and we laugh and we suffer and we hurt and we harm. We are complicated. We think an incredible number of thoughts in this minute right now. We are simple. We must be fed and watered. We are strong. In times of crisis, we can survive days trapped in rubble or 5 years or more in a refugee camp, and we are fragile. We are here today and gone tomorrow. But we also find hobbies and interests, and we while away the hours conversing with the flowers. We find contentment in family and friends, in rest and exercise. We find joy in a sunrise and a sunset. We are passionate and engaged. We are awesome and wonderfully made. We are inventive and endlessly resourceful. We suffer and still find the energy to reach out to one another. And we are often caught between sadness and celebration. And that is the burden and the blessing of this human life. Life is not a problem to be solved, but a mystery to be lived. And more than that, a mystery to be lived into. And the life and death of Jesus and the resurrection and ascension and incarnation and all these words of this Jesus are not problems to be solved at their center by quibbling over dates or historicity, over completing claims to righteous dogma or doctrine. No, they are elucidations, attempts at word explanations of this mystery. Of our movement toward, of our growing into, of our learning, fumbling as we go, that here and there, now as then, we are each in God, and God is in all. We call that the presence of the Holy Spirit. We call that faith-filled imagination. We call that being beloved. We call that incarnation. We call that learning. I saw a gravestone in Scotland when I was lucky enough to be there that was carved with what one would expect, the name and the dates of the person. And below, in large carved letters you couldn't miss, it said, "Here endeth the lesson." One day, around a table of family and friends, of community, someone will turn to those who are contributing to the world's disorder and fragmentation in public positions or in private relations and say, "Relax, you are loved." And they will know it is so. It is our work to continue to help make it so. Amen.